Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Today on the program, once again, we'll be talking with a candidate in the elections now just a week away. Our guest this morning is Judy Meyer. She is a Republican candidate for the Illinois Senate from the 52nd Legislative District. That is almost all of Vermilion County, except a little bit at the top, and the eastern half of Champaign County, and does include the cities of Champaign and Urbana, Rantoul, and Danville. This is a seat that's now held by Rick Winkle, who has decided to retire, so it is an open seat. And there are three candidates in the race. Mike Frericks, he's a Democrat. He was here on this program October 16th. And if you didn't hear that conversation, it's on our website. You can listen to it anytime you like. Joe Paranoskis, who is the candidate of the Socialist Equality Party, and he will be here on the program Thursday at 10 o'clock. And Judy Myers is here with us this morning to give you the same opportunity with all three candidates to hear what they have to say, to ask questions. If there's something that's some issue that's to you the most important thing, well, this is your chance to call in and talk with the candidate. Let me tell you a little bit more about Judy Meyer. She was born in Indiana. She went to Purdue, where she got a teaching degree. In 1980, she was elected the Vermilion County Recorder. In 1997, she was named to replace Babe Woodyard after he passed away. This is with the old 53rd district in the state Senate, and she served from 1997 until 2002. Then there was redistricting that combined most of that district with the 52nd, and she was in a primary with Rick Winkle, and she lost, so he went on to the Senate. And now she is running again to go back to the Senate. She makes her home in Danville, and we're pleased to have her here in the studio with us. This is, as I say, the opportunity for people who are listening to ask questions. All you have to do is pick up the telephone and call 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Then, if it would be a long-distance call, 800-222-9455. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Let me ask you a basic question, as I think that, you know, the criticism frequently is made of the way the General Assembly is structured, in that the power basically to set the agenda is concentrated in the hands of five people, the legislative leaders and the governor. And they go and they sit down and they basically figure out where the spending priorities will be. And then they come back to the members, and the members, essentially, they get to say yes, no. You know, it's very difficult for individual members to have a lot of influence on policy. How do you approach that? How do you go about, as an individual member of the General Assembly, go about trying to get done for your constituents what it is that you want to do?
Well, when I was there before, we did have a clear view of what the budget contained in it. I had Eastern Illinois University within my district before, and Lakeland and DACC, now Parkland, of course. And what you have to do is work within the system, work with your fellow senators, work with the leadership directly, and convince them of some of the things that are a focus for you. We had meetings about the budget, frequent meetings, so that we didn't know everything that was in the budget immediately, but we did have an opportunity to look at the various components of the budget. We had a lot of information about the budget so that when we were going to a vote on some of the issues, we knew whether we were supportive or not supportive of some of the things that were within it. Is there a perfect budget? No. But you do the best you can. You pay attention to what's good for your district, particularly the schools and the universities and colleges within your district. And it's up to you to fight for them and fight for the funding that they need. But I did get information. One of the things I think that's kind of sad about now is that I think there are about 2 days for the people to look at a final product. And I believe that it should be much more than that, at least a week, so that the public, not just the legislators, but the public, too, could have an opportunity to look at what's within the budget and fight for what they feel is the most important funding. Mm.
Well, I'm sure that for any legislator, if, say, the University of Illinois is in your district, obviously, if you represent them or you want to represent them, you're going to say, one of my priorities is securing higher funding for the university. And I'm sure people at the university always think that they could use more money. So, again, given the fact that you're just one member, how do you do that? How do you get yourself into the process so that that actually translates into more money in that line for the university?
Well, I did it for Eastern. I did work, and I brought people from the legislature to Eastern Illinois University. We did tours of the university. We talked with the officials at the university and the administration and the students. And we actually did secure some funding for Eastern Illinois University that they needed. I think that's one way to do it. And the advantage of a legislator who represents the University of Illinois is that there isn't a section of this whole state that isn't affected by the University of Illinois. There are students from all over this state and surrounding states and foreign countries, but everyone knows the University of Illinois. There's a focus on the research that's done within the university system, and if you're in the agricultural industry, you pay attention through all kinds of articles in Farm Week and Farm Bureau publications about what's going on in research. So the University of Illinois affects everyone everywhere in the state. So there is already a focus. There isn't anyone who doesn't know something about the University of Illinois and what they're all about. And look to them for some of the really dramatic research that they have, not just for ag, but in a lot of renewable fuels and a lot of different aspects of the university.
Well, let's talk with some people who are on the phone here. We already got three ready to go, starting with someone in Urbana, and this is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Thanks for this opportunity to hear from the candidate. I want to say to the candidate, before I ask one quick question, that the literature I'm getting from you and your Democratic opponent is totally insulting and assumes that the voters really don't know anything at all about the history of the way the two major parties connive to make a mess of our state. And so I read your literature, and I read the literature from Frerichs, and it simply is disgusting. You don't think we're very intelligent. Both parties are really, really guilty of self-dealing, looking out for themselves. And so in this last week, don't mail me anything if you can't figure out some way to actually be constructive and talk about your vision for the state. Now, one question. You were senator. You lost the primary to Rick Winkle, and you didn't finish your term. You resigned in order to take state sinecure. I am really, really offended by that, and I'd like for you to explain it in clear, plain language. This is something that your constituents don't get to do when they lose out on jobs. Why should we trust you with this job again? You didn't finish the job the first time. You took a position that from Governor Ryan, which I think later was proven to be an illegal position. Why should we trust you again?
Well, you want to respond to what the call I had to say?
I'd be more than happy to. I was defeated by Rick Winkle, as was mentioned by this caller. That is true. Rick Winkle and I had a campaign that spoke about the issues, but he defeated me. I then supported him. I remained through session that year. In 2002, I remained through the veto session. All of the responsibilities that I have had in legislation were finished. I was going to have no job because I'd been defeated in the primary, but I stayed through session, through veto, and I finished my responsibilities. I was then offered a job that had to do with the fact that I'd been in the Senate and on the Ag Committee for 6 years. Besides being on the Ag Committee, I was on an Ag Export Committee. And so I took the job. But my responsibilities within the Senate were done. Yes, they were sworn in January. That was 1 month later. But I finished all of my bills. I finished the veto session. That's the truth.
What about the comment of the caller about general negativity in the campaign? This is something that is widely complained about by voters, and I don't think it really matters whether they're Democrats or Republicans or independents or whatever. They don't like it.
No, they don't. And as I said, Senator Winkle and I ran against one another, and we did not have negative campaigning. I have never had a campaign in which it was as negative as it is now. We did not run a negative advertising for 5 weeks. But unfortunately, and I think anyone who is statistically involved in campaigns knows, negative campaigning works. So we had to begin to answer. And the question that I was asked just now is one of the negative campaign ads that was sent out all over my district. It's been on radio. They've tied me to a job and said I quit the Senate, which I did not. I had a month to go, but I had finished all of my responsibilities. And it's an example of people believing what they hear or see in an ad. There are no rules as to whether we have to be truthful in an ad or not. So after 5 weeks of the negative campaigning going on, we did start to answer some of it.
All right. Well, let's go on to someone else. This is line number 2, and it is a caller in Champaign. Hello.
Hello. I'm really interested in seeing how your position on the mascot issue at the University of Illinois, the person you're wanting to replace took very strong stance in support of the mascot, and this was at the legislative level. Also, Republicans have come out as a platform issue last election cycle, having the chief alignment as something worthwhile in terms of saving. I'm bringing this up in the context of fraternities and sororities dressing up as Mexicans. They have a tacos and tequila theme party where they dressed insultingly as illegal immigrants, janitors, pregnant women. I'm bringing this up because the climate of hate, of misrepresentation, is very strong on this campus, particularly as they as they affect students of color. And tomorrow at 12 o'clock on the quad, there's going to be an information session. Some may call it a protest, but students of color are galvanizing to show the effects that this mascot is having on the rest of the community. So can you tell me what your position is on this, how it's different from Winkle's, and how you see the NCAA's decision to label this mascot as hostile and abusive?
I don't feel that it's hostile or abusive. I also would respect your ability to go to the quad, and if you feel the way you do to protest it, that is certainly your right in this country. I don't believe in any kind of racial abuses at all, and have never participated in anything that was a racial abuse, but I had viewed the chief as respectful. I know that many don't agree with that, but I don't find it offensive. I grew up in Winnemac, Indiana, and was surrounded by a culture of the Potawatomi Indians, and the town was named after Chief Winnemac. And so I just didn't feel that it was disrespectful.
Do you think that this is something that the legislature ought to be involved in?
No, I do not. I think it's a decision of the Board of Trustees of the University of Illinois, and that they should listen to the people directly involved and then make a decision. Listen to everyone, regardless of what their views are, because I get both views as I go around and campaign in many venues. Many people feel the way I do, that it's respectful and they look forward to seeing the chief. And they have given me a little bit of the history of the chief and the fact that when it initially started, they did go and learn some of the dancing techniques, and at that point, everyone thought that it was respectful.
Well, let's go to another call. Let's go to Champaign. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm concerned that our government isn't doing enough to end the genocide that's happening in the Darfur region of the Sudan, where Christian people are routinely executed and raped for their beliefs. And I know a year or two ago, legislators in Illinois overwhelmingly passed a law to divest state pension funds from the Sudan. And now there's been a lawsuit filed against that. Big business interests are challenging our moral imperative to stop giving funding to this repressive government. And I'm wondering if you were elected, would you stand up for the victims of this genocide and support the divestment, or would you side with the financial backers, the business interests, and whether you have any other legislative ideas to address this horrible tragedy?
It's largely a national issue. I don't agree to support any legislation until I actually see it in print and see what it does. Obviously, no one is in favor of the genocide going on, but I cannot tell you that I would favor any piece of legislation unless I saw it. I'm appalled, too, at some of the things that are going on.
Does that get at your question, Colin?
Vaguely, yes.
All right, well, let's go to line number one next. This is Urbana. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Uh-huh.
I, in the past couple months, have heard Judy Myers and some of her supporters refer to legislation that the democratically controlled legislature and governor's office passed that basically extended equal rights to same-sex couples across the state of Illinois. And I take personal interest for this because I have two mothers that have been together for over 30 years and have raised and supported me in every shape way possible. So I was wondering if the senator believes what her supporters, and I believe she's even referred to this as special rights being granted to citizens of this state, and if she could explicitly say what is so special about a committed and loving relationship and partner being able to visit a sick one and have all the same equal rights that her and her husband would have or any other heterosexual couple in this state.
I feel that marriage is between a man and a woman. And yet, if you have had two mothers and they have been supportive of you, that's wonderful, because there are a lot of young people who haven't had that experience.
Do you want to call her? You want to follow up?
Yeah, I would like her to answer the question. I mean, I'm asking, does she believe that those are special rights, as I've heard her and her supporters refer to them as? And again, basically what these rights were extended to these couples are saying, if you're sick and you're in a hospital and your partner, who before couldn't make a life or death decision, now can, because they have been in a committed and loving relationship, just as anybody that's been a heterosexually married couple for 2 days would have. But does she consider those special rights? And if they are, why are they so special?
I have not seen any legislation. I don't know if what exactly you're referring to as special rights. Are you saying that someone cannot make decisions for a person? There are ways within Illinois law that a person can designate how they want to be treated at the end of their life. And that goes to donating organs, all kinds of things. Is that what you're referring to?
No, ma'am. Again, what I'm asking here is, I've heard you and your supporters call this specific legislation that granted equal rights to homosexual couples, same as heterosexual couples, same as you and your husband would have. I have heard you and your supporters refer to these as special rights.
Are you talking about marriage rights?
No, that has not been extended. But if you looked at the law that has been passed, and whether or not you say you've seen it now, I think you trying to be elected to the state senate would have an interest in knowing exactly what laws have already been passed to grant rights to those who had it denied before, would know that whether or not you come down on the side of this being special rights or not, when simply you were just extending equal rights to those that it had before been denied.
Okay. I'll take a look at it. I don't know the specific law you're referring to. I am against marriage between same-sex couples.
Okay. So you then deny what you and your supporters have been saying, that these are special rights granted to citizens of this state. You would have voted in support of extending medical benefits and health benefits and end-of-life benefits to homosexual couples in the state of Illinois.
Well, I would extend them to people. I don't know what homosexual...
You're calling my parents not people, then?
I mean, no, I said they are people.
Okay.
They are people.
So you would have voted in support of that?
I have not seen the language of that bill, nor will I say whether I would have supported it or not. What I am telling you for sure is that I am against marriage between same-sex partners.
Well, I guess then the basic question is, what your feeling is about whatever it is you want to call it, civil unions, something that would say, all right, we're not going to call it marriage, we're going to call it something different, but what we're going to say is that same-sex couples should have the same rights under law as heterosexual couples do.
Well, how do you determine whether there is a union if you don't have what is called a marriage? I don't have a problem with you saying that someone has a right to talk with you, talk you through an end-of-a-life situation. I don't have a problem with that.
And that, so though you would oppose the idea of creating some kind of statute, some kind of law,
yes.
some kind of formal
yes.
recognition
yes.
of
I
the
would.
Union.
I would.
That would in a sense parallel marriage in everything
right.
else but the name.
I think that's a fair statement.
All right. We're almost at our midpoint here. Our guest is Judy Meyer. She's a Republican candidate for the Illinois Senate for the 52nd District. This is the seat that's now held by Rick Winkle. He is retiring. It is an open seat. There are three candidates. Mike Ferricks is the Democrat. He was on this program on October 16th. You can hear that interview on our website. Judy Myers is here today, and also Joseph Paranauskas, who is the candidate of the Socialist Equality Party. He will be here on Thursday. You'll have the same opportunity with each candidate. If you have questions, call us, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And the next person is in Urbana, line number two. Hello. Is there a caller there in Urbana on line two?
Hi.
Yes.
Yes. An issue that has been in the news frequently over the last few weeks is embryonic stem cell research. And there are over 400,000 embryos in storage in this country, most of which are surplus resulting from in vitro fertilization, and most of these will likely be discarded. You have said you oppose embryonic stem cell research because you believe these embryos are human beings. If that's the case, then do you also oppose the in vitro fertilization clinics and process that produces these embryos? And if not, then how do you explain the inconsistency in your position?
I don't consider it an inconsistency. I am for adult stem cell research and have read many, many kinds of articles about adult stem cells. They have come up with about 40 successes in dealing with adult stem cells, and I hope that that research continues.
But if you oppose embryonic stem cell research on the basis of these embryos being human beings, shouldn't you also support legislation that would ban the in vitro process that creates these embryos?
I don't consider them to be like issues.
But in vitro fertilization inevitably produces extra embryos that are discarded. So if you believe that the discarding of these embryos is murder, then shouldn't you oppose in vitro fertilization?
Well, as I said before, I don't view it the same way that you do, and I don't consider them to be like issues.
So then are you saying you do not consider embryos to be
human? I'm saying that I don't agree with you that they are issues that are parallel to one another.
But you said on the WILL TV debate that you oppose embryonic stem cell research because you believe embryos are human beings. So shouldn't you oppose in vitro fertilization?
I don't consider those two issues to be parallel issues, and so I don't feel the same way that you do about the two issues.
All right, I think I'm going to move on here. Let's go to another caller. This would be someone in Danville, line number three. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I have some coworkers in Danville that were workers at the Department of Corrections in 2002 when there was a veto session called to discuss the termination of the sergeant's position and the privatization of the dietary and the commissaries at the facilities there. Judy Myers, we believe, voted according to her party direction on that, or abstained from voting on that, and just voted present, perhaps. But we'd like to know if she were elected, where would her loyalties lie, with her constituents or with her party? Because at that time, she told the workers in Danville that she basically didn't care what they thought. She was going to vote the way her party told her to vote, and she told that to their face. So we'd like to know what her stance would be now.
That is untrue. I did not tell them to their face any such thing. I was fighting to keep the Paris work camp open, so I kept a lot of things on the table because I wanted the Paris work camp to remain open. I believe in that work camp and in what they offer to someone who's leaving the prison system. I did not tell people, and I don't know where you heard this, I never said to the workers at the prison that I didn't care what they said. That is untrue.
The question is, how did you vote on it?
You asked, you said that I said to them that I didn't care what they felt, that I was going to vote the party theme. That's not true. I was working hard to keep the Paris Work Camp open.
I didn't mention the Paris Work Camp.
Well, I'm telling you that it was all part of a situation that was going on. 9/11 had happened. There were cuts going everywhere within the system. Prisons were being closed all over this state. I wanted Danville Prison to remain open. I wanted the Paris Work Camp to remain open. And all of that were at issue in that particular time frame.
And this still doesn't answer my question of how did you vote?
On which issue are you talking about?
On the corrections issues.
I voted present because I was hoping and working within the administration to make sure that the work camp and that the prison in Danville remained open.
So your vote of present did not give them the one vote that they needed to get the bill passed. So thank you very much for that answer.
Well, you want to follow up on that? You want to make any further comment?
No, it was a tough time because 9/11 had just happened. We were working on a budget where we were having to make cuts across the board, and it was difficult. And there were talks of closing prisons all over this state, which were to me very, there were a lot of jobs involved there that were an issue then. And so those of us who were there were working as hard as we could. I was working to keep Danville Prison open, but I also represented the Paris Work Camp, which is why I mention it. Mm-hmm. And I was working to make sure that those prisons stayed open.
So you think that at that time, was there actually some possibility that the prison in Danville might have been closed?
There were talks about every single prison within the state almost, and there were lists that we would see that would talk about any prison within the system being closed. And so Danville was on a list once. I don't know if it was ever publicized, but when we were within Springfield, we saw that, and Paris did close. So that was definitely an issue that those of us who represented that area were working very hard to keep that prison camp open. I toured it many times. I knew what they were doing. I thought that it was a good kind of transition for the guys and that were getting ready to go back out into society.
All right, let's go to line one. This is also somebody in Danville. Hello.
Hi. You've criticized the county board for offering early retirement to its employees, but you voted for early retirement for state employees in June of 2002. Am I missing something as to why it's a good idea for state employees to be able to retire early, but a bad idea for county employees?
When I voted for the Early Retirement Incentive, ERI,
No, that's okay. The caller hung up, but please
okay.
Go ahead.
I voted for it because it was suggested to us by the Bureau of the Budget, and I listened to the Bureau of the Budget. They thought it was a good idea. That's why I voted for it.
All right. Well, let's go on to, let me see, Champagne would be next here, line number two. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me. Ms. Myers, you had a very poor record with environmental groups when you were in the Senate last time. I've seen statistics that said you voted against the environment 70% of the time. If you were sent back to Springfield, would you continue to vote against the environment?
Well, I contribute to environmental groups, and I do care about the environment, and this area has some of the best parks, which I do support, of any place in the state. And I'm supportive of that. I supported a park to be created in near Georgetown that honored Senator Harry Babe Woodyard. And so I have a record of supporting some environmental issues. And so I don't think it's fair to totally say that I don't care at all about the environment, because I do. When I was a young mother, some of the other young mothers and I took it upon ourselves to collect newspapers and aluminum cans at the schools, and we actually were so successful that we collected almost too much. So there have been periods of my life when I've worked very hard for environmental issues, including the support of the parks, the state parks and that are here, and the land acquisition for some open lands.
All right, let's go to, I think we have another Urbana caller here, line one. Hello. Is there a caller there on line one in Urbana? Well, perhaps not. While we're seeing if we can get some more folks here lined up, let me ask you something completely different. but something that is a, for the legislature, if we're, for people who are there, for people who are running, seems to be a perennial issue, and that has to do with funding for schools. I'm talking about primary and secondary schools. As long as I'm sure I've said this many times before, as long as I can remember, we've had people here on this program saying that they think it would be a good idea if we moved away from the property tax as the primary support for schools. And what likely would happen, that would mean that there would have to be an increase in the income tax. And then perhaps there would be some way to give people a break on their property tax so that they, in the, at the end of the day, wouldn't end up paying more tax, just that would come from different sorts of sources. Seems like every candidate I can ever think of who's been on this show has said, yeah, great idea. The thing is that it seems that in Springfield, it's just it's a non-starter. Assuming that you think that, again, that this idea of the tax swap is a good idea, and you may talk about it in more detail if you like. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But assuming you think that that's a good idea, how do you actually make it happen?
Well, you have to work with every single group within the state. You have to work with the business groups and the Farm Bureau and the teachers. I'm lucky in that I have the IEA support and I have the support of the business groups and the Farm Bureau. And you can't accomplish it unless you bring together all the parties and come up with a bill. I like the idea of property tax relief. Why? Because we have small businesses and we pay a lot of taxes, property taxes and a lot of taxes. So it would be nice. And I've talked to a lot of the farm community, and they are very much interested in that. But you have to come up with something that isn't immediately going to have such fierce resistance that it can't be called in the House. The governor, both governor candidates have said that the one that's that is presented now, which was a good start, and at least they did something, but the one that's presented now, Senator Winkle's bill, isn't going to be called in the House, and both gubernatorial candidates have said that they are opposed to it. So you have to work hard and get everybody to the table and come up with something that secures, make sure that you do have a swap, that you do have property tax relief that isn't going to just disappear. And you have to have within, in my opinion, within any proposal that we have, it's not going to be easy, of course, but you just have to work at it. You have to have a component of that bill that talks about school construction, both K through 12 and higher ed. Because right now there isn't any revenue source for the kind of construction programs they're talking about, and that has to be a part of it. You can't just fund them. You have to make sure that the buildings are okay, that they have the wiring they need. In my old district, there were some schools that they were so old that it was a major issue for them to get the wiring in place for the computer labs. So you have to make sure that you take care of construction needs and repair needs for the institutions as well as the funding.
Hmm. Seems to me that in the past, the big roadblock has been the people who represent the collar counties, and they tend to be Republicans. So,
yes.
So you would, being, you know, the Chicago people seem to think it's a good idea. Downstate people think it's a good idea. It's the collar counties there. It's where the problem is. And so here you would have to be, in a sense, you would have to be in position at to speaking to your fellow Republicans who would say, sorry, Judy, we're not going to do this, to try to persuade them that, in fact, that it would be a good idea, if not in their interest, then in the interest of the entire state.
Well, two things. One, they're not totally against property tax relief, but they haven't tied into any particular bill yet. And when I was in the Senate before, I had a meeting of, I brought some of my fellow Republican senators from the suburbs to the Danville area, to my district, I should say. And I brought the school administrators and teachers and IEA and all the teachers' groups to a meeting. And whether it brought it clearer to them as to what some of the problems are that face the downstate schools who don't have a per pupil foundation level like they do in the suburbs or not, I don't know. But there were several legislators who were at least willing to come to my district and listen. And I think that's the kind of thing that you need to do. You need to be a little bit creative. You need to make sure that they understand the disparity between the two. And there was a lot of conversation from the administrators and the teachers as to the problems that they have within the older schools. We're not talking often about constructing a new school necessarily, but in making sure that the school can handle the computers and the special needs that there are for children these days. So I think it's an educational kind of process. Bring them down, talk to them, let them see. let them actually go to the schools. My predecessor, Babe Woodyer, did that, and I did that too.
Right. Well, we have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Judy Myers. She is a Republican candidate for the Illinois State Senate from the 52nd District. And we're here open to whatever questions you might have. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's try here line number two, I think, in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Inge. I so appreciate WILL's campaign time service. And Ms. Myers, thanks so much for making yourself available to us. I am a many years member of the Champaign County Board. So when I hear an ad sponsored by Citizens for Judy Myers that references the Champaign County Board, of course I pay close attention. You're recently running an ad that has a man and woman speaking, and they make a non-specific charge about your opponent making a mess of the pension program for Champaign County employees, and they refer to him saying nothing about cost overruns at the Champaign County Nursing Home construction project. There's no pension mess that Mr. Ferrix has made. It's true he was reassigned. The duties as for being our IMRF agent were moved from the auditor's office to another department, not because of any pension mess. It's because we invested in some human resource software, and payroll administrations have been shifted. Nothing whatsoever to do with Mr. Ferrick's performance. Regarding the nursing home, I dare say if the auditor got involved in that, his involvement would probably be resented. We have consultants, we have attorneys, we have a facilities committee. I really, really dislike this ad. And because the very first caller on today's program brought up the issue of the negative campaigning, I listened when you said there are no requirements that we tell the truth. But when you put this ad together, or when the citizens put this ad together, did you speak with county board members, county board chair, county administrator? And now that you know something more about it, would you consider withdrawing that particular ad?
I did speak to county board members, and actually before that ad ever came out, and for a lot of the time that I have been a candidate, county board members have been coming to me with concerns. And there are a couple of things that now that you bring it up that I would mention. One, when my opponent was on the county board, he suggested an early retirement incentive. And when he did, it cost the county, Scott Tapley says, I believe, about $2.5 million. When he took over as the IMRF agent, the fund was about $6 million to the good. It's now $4 million to the bad. So that was one hit. And then he suggested when he was the auditor that there be a reduction in the levy. And that cost, by the estimates of the county board members who probably are Republicans, about $1.5 million. So if you put those two together, it's not a great recommendation, and it is actually something that the county board members have told me is, in fact, what happened.
Well, I guess people of good conscience will disagree on the advisability of early retirement. Certainly some people, our administrators themselves, thought it was a good idea. I do not, I'm not sorry that I voted for it, but let's not get too much into county government. But I think that you would have better ads if you consulted more broadly among county board members before putting them together. Thanks much.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Any last thing you want
to
add?
I didn't just make it up. I talked to county board members who are there and feel that sometimes they don't have a voice in things that happen occasionally, and they do keep track of the financial impact of things, and I wouldn't just do that unless someone had given me facts and figures.
All right. And let's go to, I think, let me try again for Urbana Line 1. Is there a caller there, Urbana Line 1? Perhaps not. Let's try Line 3. Hello. Is there a caller there on Line 3? All right, how about we go try line number four? Hello.
Yeah, I got a question. We'll say if you are concerning property tax and school funding, we'll say you pay $1,200 in property tax and you pay tax.
I'm sorry, Carl, you're dropping out on us. We're not getting all of your question. I'm sorry. I think we just got somebody who was in a place where we were losing him, and we really couldn't get all of his question. If he would like to try to call back, we'll see if we can get him a better spot for him. Let's go to Champagne, then line one. How about that? Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about the deficit. The senator has stated that things were paints everything as a kind of rosy picture when she was in the state senate, but when she left office, she and George Ryan, there was a $5 billion deficit. Can she address those two kind of conflicting arguments?
I can. That figure that you just gave is a Blagojevich figure, and the figures that I have from the persons that I know who talk about the budget say that it's nearer 2 or 3. Hey, it isn't great. But now we have someone who's more than doubled the state debt. We're now $20 billion in debt. So I don't think you can compare the two. I'm not telling you that there weren't problems within the George Ryan administration, but this administration has actually increase the pain for everyone in this state. And instead of cutting across the board, as we had to do after 9/11, they're proposing new programs that cost billions and billions, and they're raiding the pension fund.
Is there anything in particular that you would suggest should be cut? Or are there some specific things you can point to and you can say, this particular thing, we're spending too much, we should cut it, or we shouldn't be spending that money at all?
Well, All Kids is one that I think is a wonderful idea. It isn't working, and it costs a lot of money. And it's one that we needed to wait until the financial situation of the state improved. Because you can't continue to have new programs when you're not paying your bills to the Medicaid people and when you're more than doubling the state debt. It's time to kind of pull in a little bit and meet the responsibilities that you have to people like hospitals and nursing homes and physicians. All kids you can't find a hospital or a doctor. You just can't find them. And I've talked to a lot of nursing homes, and they're often 6 months behind in the payments that the state make to them. And those are all vital services to this state. So I think that when you are in a problem, you don't borrow from pensions to balance the budget, and you don't not pay the people that are providing services within the state. So you have to start there and maybe put off some of the programs that have some good parts to them, but they're expensive.
According to the numbers that I read, the state of Illinois has the most underfunded pension system in the entire country. And this is something that concerns people who work for the university, concerns teachers, concerns all those people who are in that pension fund. And the criticism is that the legislature has diverted the money that was supposed to go in there and put it in other places.
Well, yeah, they're balancing the budget with that.
I guess basically my question is, what would you do about that?
You have to get back to basics. You cut some. You don't propose new programs that cost hundreds of millions of dollars when you're not paying the pension. In 1995, when Jim Edgar was there, they started a pension system, and they paid into it every single year until 9/11. And after that, then they went back to paying into the pension system to try to get it up to 100% funding. And no, they weren't there at 100%, but at least they were doing that and not cutting, not spending $2.3 billion. Take $2.3 billion out of the pension fund, because I can't go anywhere within this whole district that people aren't worried about it. There are a lot of people who are employed within the state as a state employee or within the university system. The teachers are worried about it, their retirement system too. And it's just not the way you should run a state.
Is there some way that the legislature could pass a law essentially that's saying, well, you won't do that? This is the amount of money that's supposed to go in, and this is the amount of money that's going to go in.
Well, the state can do anything they want to. It used to be that, as we have observed lately, it used to be that we said that 51% of all new revenue went to education. And it used to be that we said that as we were preparing the budget, we would consider the needs of education first, and all of those things are not being done now. So there are simple things that you can do. You can go back to what we used to do, and you can concentrate on the kind of things that we owe people, that we owe them paying our debts to them. We owe them paying what they are due out of the Medicaid fund. It's almost to the point where Medicaid is more a part of the fund than education for the first time.
We have other callers. Let's talk with someone in Champaign. This is line two. Hello.
Hello, line two?
Yes.
Yes. I wanted to return briefly to the issue of embryonic stem cell research because, with all due respect, I don't believe that you answered the earlier caller's question. You said that you don't see a connection between in vitro fertilization and the embryos created through that process and the embryos used in embryonic stem cell research. So given that, my question to you is, if you don't believe in embryonic stem cell research because those embryos are alive and destroying them through that process would be murder, then why is it that you don't believe destroying the embryos created through the in vitro fertilization process, those extra embryos, why you don't believe that's wrong and that's murder as well?
Well, I answered it before. I don't view them as the same, and I don't think that they are parallel issues. I don't believe the same way that you do.
Well, my question to you is why. I respect that you don't agree with me, but my question is why do you not see them
well,
the same?
Well, I'm just telling you that that is my belief.
Okay, so you either are unable to explain to us why you believe that or you don't want to.
Well, you are entitled to your opinion, and so am I.
We only have a couple of minutes left. I want to get on to at least one more caller. Penfield, line number three. Hello.
Hello. I am pro-life. And I vote for pro-life candidates. And it would seem to me that parental notification is the most moderate pro-life law that we could pass. And I recognize and respect the growing role that grandparents have in their children's lives, in their grandchildren's lives these days. But I cannot understand how making an exception for notifying grandparents, which would ultimately save the lives of these unborn babies. We don't want to make these exceptions. We want to make a stronger pro-life law that will eventually, illegalize abortion altogether. So I would like you to explain to us, to the pro-life community, that if you couldn't vote for a parental notification bill, the most non-controversial that any abortion bill could be, what types of pro-life legislation do you think you could be successful with within the legislature?
I am pro-life. I have always been pro-life, with the exception of the life of the mother, rape, and incest. When I voted present for parental notification, I said that I was for parental notification, but that I asked the legislature and the people within the legislature to work on including grandparents. And why was that? Because I'd met with several grandparent groups, GROC, Grandparents Raising Our Children. I am a grandparent. I am for parental notification. I would like for grandparents to be involved, but the proposals that there are out there now are for anybody to be able to talk, any adult to be able to talk to the children. I think that it should be a parent or a grandparent, someone that is usually the very closest person to that child, because they need support of a family when they're making decisions like that, and that's what I want them to be able to do.
So is it that you think that grandparents, if a girl was thinking about having an abortion, she didn't want to talk to her parents, that you could include grandparents in there and that satisfy the requirement for parental notification?
I do, because I know many grandparents who provide a lot of the care for a child and are very close to the children. It gives them one more option in case there is something terrible going on within the family itself. Unfortunately, that does happen. If you talk to the law enforcement people, the judicial folks, you will know that that does happen. So I just wanted another very close relative of a child to be able to talk with them about that kind of decision.
All right. We'll try and get one more. Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is, how does Judy Myers feel about the governor's decision this year to require pharmacists to fill women's prescriptions for contraceptives?
I object to the governor coming up with decisions without going to the legislature, without presenting to the legislature all of the issues that there are for some of these kinds of things. And so I would hope that he would present exactly what he's talking about so that the legislatures can read the bill and then make a decision intelligently?
We're almost out of time. We've talked about a number of things. Is there anything in particular you just like to mention just in the last minute or so?
That we're small business people in both counties, and I think that the focus that I have on education, I was a substitute teacher and on small business and the farm community since I was on the Ag Committee before and asked to be again, and higher education in general. I think those are all important issues that we all need to be concerned about.
Do you think the legislature should continue or extend the rate freeze that was imposed when the electric utilities were deregulated 10 years ago and now is due to come off beginning next year?
Well, I hope they would work it out so that it isn't 40%. I'm not telling you that I know whether a rate increase is needed, but if it is, it is going to have to be less than 40% and maybe a gradual increase if they can convince everyone that they need it, then a gradual increase. And most of the people I talk to are worried because they don't want a drastic increase, and they're willing to listen to reason if that actually is necessary to do it gradually.
Okay, so what you're saying is that you would favor a phased in rate increase. So you don't think that the rate freeze should be continued for another 3 years, as that seems to be what's up for discussion.
No, unless they won't negotiate with one another. But my understanding is that that's going on right now, and that they're all talking, and that hopefully something less than a 40% increase, which could be devastating to young families and the everybody. And if they can come up with something, then let's listen to them. And I think probably it'll have a lot of support in Springfield.
Okay. Well, our guest this morning, Judy Myers, a Republican candidate for the Illinois State Senate in the 52nd District. You also can go back to our archive and hear her Democratic opponent, Mike Frericks. He was on this program on October 16th. And then this week on Thursday, Joseph Paranoskas. He is the candidate of the Socialist Equality Party, also in the same district, 52nd Senate. He will be here to do the same thing. Thanks very much for
being
with us.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.